Well, as you know, this is a very ambitious and probably impossible task that I have decided to launch, which is to begin to introduce this teaching and study together what we can of Dogen Zenji's Mountains and Waters Sutra. And Dogen, as you probably know, but if you don't, I'll tell you, was our ancestor who in the 12th century brought our style of Zen from China to Japan, and 13th century, yes, 13th century, of course, yeah, 1200s, which is called the 13th century, right? Okay. So anyhow, and there's only going to be three class sessions, so we'll probably get through about 1/20th. Of the material, and I just want to tell you from the very beginning that if you thought you were going to get all the way through in three classes, we're not. However, there will also be Dharma talks during the Sesshin that I'm leading on August 10, 11, and 12, which will be from this material, and you're welcome to come to those if you, even if you aren't in the Sesshin. And then the other thing that I have is, first of all, if this is of interest to you, I highly recommend you just go ahead and buy this book. It just came out, Shohaku Okamura, a commentary on Carl Bielefeld's translation of the sutra, and it's just an incredible resource. Then there might be some of you who don't really want to do that, but you would like to have the whole thing, even though we'll probably only do 1/20th of it. And if that's the case, and if you're coming to more than one class, there's maybe about 12 of these. This is the whole thing. So I will have these out at the end of class if you'd like to take one. And for everybody, I have what we're going to be talking about tonight. So I'm going to go ahead and pass these out. And as this is going around, I just want to launch in and just talk a little bit about, just as an opening, a sutra is a teaching that is generally comes to us because they were written down. And right from the beginning of this sutra, Dogen and Shohaku are telling us that this is not a sutra about mountains and waters. It's not about mountains and waters. It actually is proposing to us that the mountains and the waters are themselves sutra. That the mountains and the waters are expounding Buddha's teaching. It's not an interpretation. It's a direct expression of Buddha's teaching. The mountains and the waters. Shohaku says, when we see mountains and waters with our true awakened eye, we see the Buddha and we hear his, her teachings. And that is our sutra. Mountains and waters as the sutra are not objects that we need to study objectively. We are parts of the mountains and waters themselves. So right away, maybe you can sense, oh, this is not just some ordinary, like, let's study the material and kind of try to think about it and figure it out. This is a direct invitation to direct experience. And whether, we talked about this a little bit Wednesday, because I began introducing this material at the Dharma Talk, and I'll repeat a few of the things I said there. You know, there are those scholars who encourage us to think about mountains and waters as symbolic. That, oh, they weren't really talking about, like, necessarily real mountains and waters. And that's okay if you're of that, you know, style of practice, that's fine. And if so, the symbolic meaning is that mountains are the form side and waters are the emptiness side. So symbolically, when they're talking about mountains, we're talking about our actual direct experience. The world of form, the everyday life that we live in. And that is also the network of interdependent origination. So whenever you hear mountains, you could imagine, oh, that's also what's being talked about. It's not just rocks and, you know, bugs and stuff like that. And the waters are the emptiness, the ungraspable, eternal side, the emptiness side. And even if you just think about water, see, I can't help but get metaphorical, because that's my nature. But if you just think about water, like if you're down, like let's say you're looking at a river, right? Let's say you want to go, okay, where's the river? Let's say I tell you, bring me the river, okay? What are you going to bring? You go down, you're going to grab some water from the river, and you're going to put it in a bowl, and you're going to bring it and say, here's the river. No, that's not the river, because the river is flowing. Every moment, the river is ever flowing. So this is the metaphor for emptiness, is there is no separate self of a river. A river itself is just made up of hydrogen, you know, water, hydrogen and what, H2O, two hydrogen, one oxygen, right? So the river is a good metaphor for emptiness. Sometimes it's kind of hard maybe to think about it in terms of our ordinary lives, but if you think about a river, it's like, yeah, we can get that. It doesn't really have a form. It's always changing, and yet we can say, yeah, that's a river. So form and emptiness, kind of big themes in Buddhism. And I also invite you to consider that we're also talking about real mountains and real waters. You know, whether it be the great grand mountains that we can go to, the Sierras and the Rockies and the Ventana Wilderness and those kinds of mountains, or whether it be humble little mountains like the little mountain in the backyard, or a rock on the sidewalk, you know, and whether the waters be, you know, a great river or a little stream or the ocean, like you brought up Wednesday night, in addition to the tides, you know, learning from the tides. And somebody said, well, you know, everybody has to get out into nature. And yeah, that's important. And yet if you live in the city, you can still connect with mountains and waters. You can still look for the mountains and the waters, even in an urban environment. We talked about can I share what you said? After the talk, Rachel remembered growing up in Chicago and being on the subway and looking down and what you saw, like grass growing up.
Just like the other, like you were saying, I think, with the sprout.
Yeah.
You know, coming out of a rock.
Yeah. Yeah. A piece of grass growing up out of a sidewalk, you know, that's the mountains, you know, and the water going down through the gutter at the, you know, in the culvert. That's the waters. So we don't have to be elitist, even though I certainly am a big believer in getting out into wild nature. We're not limited to that, to really engage with this. So when we see mountains and waters with our true awakened eye, we see the Buddha and we hear his teachings, and that is our sutra. Mountains and waters actually means our life. Our life, which is connected with all beings in the Dharma world. It's not outside our life. We ourselves are mountains and waters. So what I would like to do now is talk a little bit, talk about a general principle, and also start looking at the first verse of the sutra, which is down there at the bottom of the page. That's all we're going to get to tonight, if we're lucky. I mean, you could even just stay on the first line. And if you're new to Zen, this isn't like some, oh no, I'm missing the class where we get to do the whole thing, because this is classic Zen. You know, and Dogen particularly. Each word is loaded in Dogen land. Each sentence is loaded. So even if we're going really slowly and we're just studying a word or we're just studying a sentence, we're building a shared language and kind of a muscle of study that then when we go further in the sutra, or if you take it home and read it, it starts getting a little bit more familiar. Because at first, if you just take this home tonight and read it and you've never read Dogen, you're probably going to do what I did when I first opened the sutra after I said I'd teach the class and go, oh my God, what have I done? I don't understand a word of this. But by slowing it down, by going inside it, by chewing on it, by taking the words, talking, sharing, taking it into your week, what does that mean? Taking maybe a phrase from tonight and just studying it all week, it starts opening up, I promise you. And it starts changing the way then that we actually can read this material and understand this material. So, the first thing I would just like to say is, and this is something I talked about on Wednesday, more and more I'm coming to the conclusion, and those of you who are senior practitioners here can take me on about this if you want, but maybe you agree with me. There's really just a couple of teachings in Buddhism, if not just one. Maybe there's two, or maybe there's three, and everything is just trying to help us understand these fundamental teachings. And for example, you know, the Four Noble Truths, which was the very first teaching of the Buddha. This is about the Four Noble Truths. This is about, and like Buddha said, he said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and liberation from suffering. That's it. All these books, all these teachings, everything is trying to help us understand, find our way to settle with the truth of suffering, which is the First Noble Truth. There is suffering. As long as we're running from trying to escape the truth of suffering, we suffer. And so the First Noble Truth is to actually avow, acknowledge, admit, yep, this is suffering. Right here. And then the second noble truth invites us to consider, might I have something to do with the kind of ongoing nature of spinning this suffering? And the third noble truth is when we have the insight of what the cause of that is. And then the fourth is when we commit ourselves to a path to try to do less of the spinning and more of the opening, relaxing, and joining. So this teaching gives us, even though it's kind of, the language can seem kind of poetic or kind of esoteric, by the time we leave tonight, I actually want to help us see in this first verse that he's teaching us how to liberate ourselves from our suffering. And I'll tell you the punchline. Do you know how we do that? I'm not going to do a pop quiz or anything. But fundamentally, you know, what we do is we loosen the grasp, the grasping mind. Because in Buddhism, when we say suffering, we don't mean like, you know, if a tree falls on you and breaks your leg, that's not suffering. That's pain. You had nothing to do with it, unless you like saw the tree falling and went and ran under it and stood there so it would fall on you. But that's not what we're talking about. Or, you know, if a car, you know, crashes into you and kills you, we're not saying, oh, you know, that's suffering and you can prevent that suffering. We're talking about the suffering that you have something to do with creating, which is the way that we separate self and other in our minds and the way that we spin the story. Poor me, I'm separate, that's the person over there, I'm over here, they did it to me. You know, all these stories that we spin are suffering. So loosening the grasp of that mind and opening to this profound nourishment of the dynamic energy of life that is all around us all the time, I would propose to you that that is what we're talking about when we're talking about liberation. And we can find teachings that help us loosen the grip of the grasping mind. We can find teachings that kind of try to inspire us to open to the great vast sky, one bright pearl, you know, one of Patrick's favorites, one bright pearl. What was the one you did just recently? It was like one bright pearl, but it was the, I didn't take the class, the mind, the big, the radiant light. Thank you. The radiant light, the one bright pearl, the self-fulfilling samadhi, you know, all of these, the metaphors that we have in Zen are inviting us to open to this big, vast side, right, the Dharmakaya. So here he's going to do that right here in the Mountains and Waters Sutra. So let's look at it together. And the proposition of being able to experience and appreciate both sides of reality at the very same time. That's the proposition here. So who would be willing to just go ahead and read this first verse? Stan, nice loud voice.
These mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. Each, abiding in its own Dharma state, fulfills exhaustive virtues. Because they are the circumstances prior to the kalpa of emptiness, they are this life of the present. Because they are the self before the germination of any subtle sign, they are liberated in their actual occurrence. Since the virtues of the mountains are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains. And the marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably liberated from the mountains.
So if your mind is spinning and you're going, uh-oh, here we go, I don't get it, welcome to the club. This is the the on-ramp to studying Dogen. Okay, so I want to study it with you now. Let's go into this, and actually let's look at it line by line, because this is the way that it can start to get a little bit unmystified, and I'm also going to invite us to talk about our own lives and our own experiences with regard to these teachings. Okay, so if you go to page 2 of your handout, we're just going to focus on this first line. Just the first line. So don't worry about all the, uh-oh, prior to the kalpa of emptiness. What does that mean? Don't worry about that. Okay? These mountains and waters. Now, we already know. What's he saying? You. Your life. So when it says these mountains and waters, he is talking about you and your life. And the people that you know and the world that you live in. That's what he's talking about. And it's not the mountains and waters of the past and the future. It's the mountains and waters of the present. Right now. Your life right now is the expression of the old Buddhas. Shohaku tells us that the old Buddhas means the timeless eternal truth. So at this very moment, at the very same time, there is your present moment life experience with all of its joys and sorrows and bumps and questions and complications. And at the very same moment, the eternal truth is expressing itself through you and through your actual experience. Because how else, where else does the eternal, timeless truth have to show up? It has nowhere else to show up but in this life. Shohaku says, here, the person in the mountains must be a person who loves the mountains. In Sanswikyo, that's the name for this, he also wrote that the mountains belong to the people who love mountains. This love is important. We are in the mountains and we love them. When we love mountains belong to us and we belong to the mountains. We're living within the network of interdependent origination and we love this network. To love means to be intimate and to be one. So he's not only saying that your very life right now of the present is an expression of the eternal truth. He's saying, love it. Really? Your actual life? You mean your life the way it is right now? Love that. The network of interdependent origination. What does that mean? Somebody can take a shot at that.
12 links.
The 12 links? say more. If you wish.
Well, in the grander view, I would say that we are all interconnected in one way or another. Which goes along with the part that none of us are really separate, distinct entities from everybody and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is one of the key teachings of the Buddha, that we're all interconnected. Even if we think we're separate, what would be some example? Oh, the example of interconnection. There we go. I knew that was going to be a really good... Would you tell us the bumblebee teaching? You learn really good things at Sangha Day when you come here to Sangha Day.
Well, I just saw a little video about how the flower on the tomato plant, the nectar in the pollen in the flower can't get out very easily, and the only way that it gets out is the bumblebee, not other sorts of bees, but the bumblebee, has to sit on that, on where the pollen comes out and vibrate its wings at a certain frequency so the pollen starts to shift and then it floats up and then the bumblebee catches it. And so as I watched the little video about that, I had this sense of, my goodness, I didn't realize how much my enjoyment of tomatoes was completely dependent on the bumblebees. So it's just an example of that relationship.
And that's one tiny example. And if you think about all the beings on the planet and all the functions and all the, you know, not even just with beings, but like the interaction of weather systems and temperature and all of this interconnection, you know. He is saying here in this phrase, these mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. Shohaku is suggesting that we consider that, you know, this is what he's talking about, is exactly this, that we're living inside this network of interdependent origination, and can we love this network? There, you asked a question, Kokyo, that I looked a little bit more into. Kokyo was curious at the Dharma talk about the expression of the old Buddhas. Like, he asked me a question and I kind of fumbled around and I forget what I said, but I found something that Shohaku said about that that I thought was pretty cool. And his understanding was that he said, these mountains and waters at this moment are the manifestation of the great way of the ancient Buddhas. So we could think about that term expression as also meaning the manifestation of. It's not, you know, we think of expression maybe like talking. So if we think about it like that, that would be that these mountains and waters, our lives are the manifestation of the old Buddhas. So I don't know if that is what you were wanting to open up a little bit on Wednesday or not, but I thought that was interesting. And manifestation is Genjo, which is this moment-by-moment manifestation. And again, he says here, timeless reality shows itself within momentary phenomena. Again, it's this idea, where else does this eternal have to show up but in our ordinary lives? So before we go to the second sentence, I'm just curious, as you're thinking about this now, this first sentence, these mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. Does that have a little bit more connection for you into something maybe that feels like is exciting or interesting or puzzling to you? Just wondering if there's anybody who has a thought right now as you reflect on this line that you'd be willing to put out. Yeah.
What occurs to me is that as we each sit here, the bones are our mountains, and we have rivers flowing through us all the time that are red. It's called our bloodstream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we are literally always moving and sitting mountains with rivers running through us.
Yeah.
70% water, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. and blood and everything mm-hmm. else, mm-hmm. and 30% mountain. In terms of flesh and firm footing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Les.
I appreciate this first sentence and your focusing the attention on, your life. Because I always appreciate that reminder, because I classically try to live as if things would be better if I had a different life.
How many people do that? Just raise your hand if you ever have the thought that a different life would be better than your life.
So, and then I'm intrigued with Shohaku's turning of the phrases of love. Love is important. When we love mountains, mountains belong to us. And so kind of get going with, what is it to love my life? But then and then it stretches a little bit. Love this network. That's maybe a little more challenging. That's challenging that self and other sensibility. And then another kind of opening of love means to be intimate. Okay, so kind of a question. Can I be present in my life?
Can I be present in my life, whatever is happening?
Yeah.
Whatever is happening, not just when I'm calm and chill and, I'm sitting in the Zendo, not that that's always calm and chill, but what about when things are hard? What about when things are really moving? This is exactly the invitation. Can I be present? Can I accept? Can I go with, like bamboo, can I flow with whatever is happening? Yeah. Yeah. And Shohaku says, basically, if you can understand the significance of this first sentence, this is the essence of the entire, sutra. Is this sentence. So I think that it's good to kind of hang out with it a little bit. But we can also look at the next sentence, because basically he's going to keep saying the same thing in so many different ways until you finally go, oh, right. So maybe a different way is an approach for you. So the next line, each abiding in its own dharma state fulfills exhaustive virtues. Every single thing is complete unto itself with nothing lacking. And while it is itself, it's also flowing. This is that both and. And I don't know if it's true for you, but for me, this is a big deal in my life, is to really start allowing myself to feel this, the concurrent existence of these things that can feel so different. Like I shared Wednesday, that, my attachment and my love for beings of the world that concurrently exists with the truth that everything is changing every second. My love of security and the concurrent reality that there is nothing fundamentally secure because everything changes. Right? The tension of Liz suggesting, like, I wish my life was different. I don't like my life right now the way that it is. Can I be with my life right now the way that it is? Doesn't mean you won't try to change stuff. We take action. But in this moment, can the mountains and waters of the present be the expression of the old Buddhas? The prior to the kalpa of emptiness and the germination of subtle sign, that may sound really kind of fancy and complicated, so let's demystify that, okay? And again, what he's doing here is he's just describing these two different sides, and he keeps saying they're one and the same and they depend upon each other. So the circumstances prior to the kalpa of emptiness, Shohaku says, that's like the Big Bang. That's like recognizing that, there are circumstances that happened before the very beginning of any kind of time or space that we could ever imagine. There was something, But because of that, we have this life of the present. And because of the germination of any subtle sign, Shohaku used the example of how a seed under the earth, if you're just looking at the earth, there you don't know that there's this seed that's going to germinate and that's going to come up and that's going to go through the earth, but it's there. It's there, right? So because there is this, there is something that is before the germination, there is this thing that happened so beyond anything that we can ever conceive of. Because of that, at the same moment, that is why we are what we are and that we're here. So this is where it starts from, like, really? So what in our lives can possibly be any kind of expression of what he's inviting us into here with this kind of symbolic language? I'm just wondering what might be these two sides for you? I have a suggestion. This is a radical thing. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Good. There's 16 of you. I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I want you each to take just a few minutes to just say, for me right now, what's coming up for me as I'm hearing this and starting to think about this material is, it might be a question, it might be an insight, it might be something that confuses you that you'd like to know more about. Just take a minute to share with a partner what's coming up for you right now with regard to this material. And I think it'll help us stir the pot a little bit so that we can open into some discussion. So just turn to the person next to you. Take turns. First person, this is what's coming up for me as I listen to this teaching.
We've been much more careful and worried about everything, objects, and living beings of all kinds.
Mm. Yeah. What if that was really true? What if it was really true? Yeah. What would that mean for how we would approach the actual moment? Yeah.
And then the question would be, how do we cultivate that memory to not forget? How can we cultivate that so that we slowly but surely can undo some of our habits, which are to tend to ignore certain things and attend to other things, just without even realizing what we're doing?
Yeah. One of the things that I love to do is to actually use the words of the wisdom words of the ancestors. And so it could even be, I'm not saying like this is the answer, but these mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. That's a pretty good mantra to carry around and experiment with. What would it feel like to go through the day, to drive the car, to go to work, contemplating consciously each day? These mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas.
You could even compact it down to old Buddha. Old Buddha.
Yeah.
Old
Buddha. Yeah. Yeah. A question. Maybe a disturbance. Somebody feeling some disturbance? And you're something itching at your head? And you have a question. Yeah? Be brave. Put it out there.
My take from this is that it's, in its purest sense, there's nothing to do. You just show up. If the old Buddhas are an expression, then that is a singularity. So all you need to do is accept and let that and breathe that in. Easy. Say.
Easier said than done.
Yes, exactly.
And yet at the simple level, that is the offering.
Yeah.
That is the offering.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then where our practice comes in is that we can have that as a thought or an aspiration, but I don't know what your experience is like, but I know for me, often in the manifestation, it's not so easy. Because of the grasping, because of the preferences, right? It's like, no, I don't want it to be like this. And yet, what if I can actually, but what if this is how it is? Mm-hmm. What if it actually is this way? What if it actually is this way? Yeah. Is there a question in there, or just, you just had an observation and insight?
No, that was just my,
which is fine.
No, that was just my observation.
Yeah. Who's got a question? Yeah, go ahead.
When I consider these words in this sutra, where I go is into this form of deep imagination of a kind of pre-birth moment, right at that moment, pre-consciousness showing up in the world. And my question is, how do I walk with that knowledge? How do I walk with that now?
Have you experimented with that, or is this just now occurring to you as you're reading these words?
Just now.
Uh-huh.
So it feels like holding on to lightning, or, you know, when I allow myself to feel into it a little bit more. And so that's disturbing.
Did you say holding on to lightning?
Like holding on to
lightning. Yeah. Disturbing.
Or the river.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the reasons that we create these constructs is because it is pretty scary to just imagine that if it was really true, that it's just this dynamic energy that's just happening moment after moment after moment, and there's nothing fundamental to rely on. That's pretty scary. And so I think that, you know, that's why we create our stories and our constructs, so that we can have a feeling of security and safety. And that's fine. That's human. This is a really important thing about both sides. They're both true. So the fact that we grasp and cling, and then that's part of our suffering, it doesn't mean, therefore, we shouldn't do that and we're bad that we do it and we have to somehow find a way to melt into this eternal truth. We can't. Because the only place the eternal can show up is in our life. So that whatever the answer to this koan is, it's not about eliminating one side or the other. It's about finding a way to be with it, accept it, live with it. And if we really peel back the veils, it can feel pretty scary or pretty like hot or like hanging on to lightning. Or like he says at the end of this, since the virtues of the mountains are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains, and the marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably liberated from the mountains. It might feel like riding the clouds. It might feel like following the wind.
Question.
Yeah.
What does he mean when he says, when this is Dogen, to follow the wind is inevitably liberated? The wind is liberated from the mountains?
Yes.
What is he trying to say there?
Well, let's look at that.
My question would be, why didn't he just use mastered again?
Where?
Well, he says the power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains. The marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably mastered from the mountains as well. I'm sorry, liberated instead of mastered again.
Well, I don't know. If anybody has a reflection on that, feel free to jump in. I was really interested when I studied what he talked about liberated, and you know, that's a word we use a lot. And Shohaku talked about, he always breaks things down, and I found this to be really pretty amazing and helpful. The word that Dogen uses is todatsu, and to means permeate. Mm-hmm. Permeate. And datsu means drop off.
Wow.
So let's just think about that for a minute.
Which word is?
The word that here in this, the wind is liberated from the mountains.
So liberated is-
the word that Dogen uses that's translated here as liberated is the word todatsu. And to means permeate. And datsu means drop off. So one of the things I did when I was studying this is I just tried to feel my way into that, to be permeated. The feeling of being permeated and the feeling of dropping off.
Yeah. Because that's kind of nature of wind. It's always dropping off. It's always moving.
Well, so clouds are also water, so... I mean, I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not for sure where I'm going with that, but to me it's like it's a little bit of a baking them together. The spiritual power to ride the clouds, it sort of feels like it's the bringing of the not the relative, the absolute.
The eternal.
The eternal. You must do that from the mountains. Yeah. You know, you can't, like you said, sorry, I'm not expressing it very well. I'm just going with what, like, this is like a poem. I'm trying to unpack it. The ability to follow the wind, like the ability of water to be both in us and outside of us, is what you get by being alive. Maybe in the mountain, whatever.
That's,
I don't know. That's just...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I heard is you're playing with really thinking about these elements and thinking about the nature of these elements and how they teach us about this both and. I think that's one of the things that's so powerful about his imagery here is that we can think about the clouds. I mean, it is made up of water. Mm-hmm. And they do move with the wind.
Yep.
Right? And this is a way that, you know, in your life, I know for myself, sometimes I find it incredibly liberating to consider that the clouds get dispersed by the wind. You know? The clouds, my grasping mind, my forming of ideas, making these things, they look solid. They can even feel oppressive. And then what happens? Well, eventually, the wind comes, blows them away, or they gather and they gather and they get stronger and stronger and stronger, and then they rain, and you get wet, and then they go away. I don't think it's an accident. I don't think he just sat down and said, I think I'm just going to kind of use this language. I think he's inviting us to consider, like you did, trying to use your imagination, putting your imagination into this.
Yeah.
And this is where, I mean, this starts getting really like do-do-do-do-do-do. But so here we are. We're in Dogen land, you know. He's using this language. He's inviting us to think about this. What is this? What could this mean to me? Well, the virtues of the mountains, they're high and broad, and so they're high and broad, and so the spiritual power to ride the clouds, he says, to go up and to go up is mastered from the mountains, from your actual life. What I did with this, I'll tell you, how I practice with this stuff. I was in the mountains. And I just take it out into the mountains and I ask them to help me. So I was there and I was hiking up towards called Mount Whitney, but in the native languages it's called Tumunguya. And I stood at the trail and I just said, Tumunguya, as I approach you, may the mountains be my body. May I belong to them. May I be liberated. May I be permeated. May I be dropped off. May I ride the clouds. May I follow the wind. May I both abide and walk. Because this is another, you know. And I just asked for, I put it out there, and then I just walked out into the mountains. Okay, so this can be the actual mountains, but this can also be you setting your intention for the day and walking out into your life, your mountains, your interdependent origination complex of the day. You're walking out there. You've got this intention. I didn't exactly know what all this stuff meant, but it sure sounded interesting. And then pay attention to what happens. And then we can start learning. So when I did that, what happened? Well, I'm walking. I have this intention. I'd stop and read it about every 10 minutes. I repeated this. I wanted to try to get these words inside so I could maybe get a little bit of insight about what they might mean. And one of the things that happened was, as I was up there, my body began to remember, oh, I used to come to these mountains when I was a very young girl. My parents took us into these mountains. And I spent 6 weeks in these mountains when I was in my mid-20s. These very mountains. I'd forgotten. I hadn't backpacked for 20 years. And I realized, oh, before I even knew about Buddha, before I even knew about the Buddha Dharma, before I knew about Dogen, my body was in those mountains feeling the wind and the cloud, following the wind and, you know, watching the clouds. So I had this feeling, it felt like the old Buddhas. When I was thinking about that question of the old Buddhas, and I wrote, before I even knew about Buddha Dharma or mountains and waters, my body was being made by these very mountains. This was my original spirit home. I remember the body that was made by these mountains. And then I realized, you know, and again, then the Dogen's words start coming. Oh, exactly, this is what eternity looks like. Because this is the only place that it has to show up in our moment-to-moment actualization. I had been listening to A Stroke of Insight when I was driving over, which is an incredible story of a woman, a scientist, who had a stroke that wiped out her analytical side of her brain, and she only had her right brain, the eternal. She only had the eternal. The form side fell away, and she only had the eternal. And she had to relearn how to gear back in her left mind so that she could function in the world. But as she did it, she decided she didn't want to take on all of the constrictive, contracted, story-making part of the left mind. She was going to take the part that would help her get through the day, but she was going to try to really stay and keep alive the feeling of oneness and unity that she experienced when she was just living in her right brain. And she had this idea or this concept of like living in the right brain and then managing the left brain. It's like taking control and telling the left brain, no, you don't get to totally run the show. And I think this is what he's beginning to invite us that we can do, is we can open and expand more and more, let ourselves be permeated, let it drop off, liberation, todatsu. Let yourself be permeated, let it be dropped off, and then, oh, there's that left brain, but maybe it won't be quite so dominant. Because we're permeated, right, Patrick?
Well, I mean, as you tell that story, I remember hearing that story as well. And she was in the middle of this stroke, and there was the telephone next to her, and she was trying to make sense of, you know, I know I should go to this telephone, but she was experiencing it as this work of art rather than, you know, this telephone. And then as you said just tonight, you know, how can every time I use my telephone, how can I also be feeling like I've got this work of art and all that it took to make, you know, just this telephone that we've all got in our pockets now, the greatness, and I think, you know, when we can hold both of those, then we really know what it is to ride the clouds. You know, nothing is a hindrance. Mm-hmm. We don't have to think work of art, mm-hmm. you know, 911. We can just be floating. Oh, 911.
Yeah. What would allow me right now to ride the clouds? What would allow me right now to follow the wind? I mean, I can't imagine why would he use this language if he didn't want us to, to go somewhere with it. But that, you know, you may have a different idea. What else? Yeah, Jayla.
What kind of keeps coming up for me is that it's not me riding the wind or holding on or letting go to anything. That is kind of an illusion. And it's more like getting that and then it just happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, getting that it's not that the me isn't personal, you know, that would be that letting go of the grip of the identity grasping mind. And just allowing, like the stroke of insight lady, allowing the left side of the brain, the self, to have its function. You know, you need to have a self so that you go through the door rather than the wall. You know, I mean, we have to make distinctions. We have to have healthy egos to know what our boundaries are. But we go way overboard and we make it everything. We make it into a tower, a castle, a construct, rather than just letting it just be, it's just a function. Right? So that, yeah, I think that's part of this equalizing the equation, is that the less attached we are to that, then the more available we are to just experience our life. Like John said, you know, I mean, basically, that is all that there is to do. It's just breathe in and breathe out, breathe in and breathe out, respond to the beings at hand, do what needs to be done. What's the problem? Right? Yeah, Kathy.
Sometimes we don't know you have choices. You're in a place where you don't even see those choices.
Right.
You know, you're just not seeing anything.
Right.
And sometimes it's hard.
Yes.
To know that.
It can be very hard. Yeah. What do you find if you're in such a place is something that you find helpful to?
That it's not going to be here forever. This is just another state. It's going to change into something else.
And that's the upside of impermanence, right? The downside is, oh, I don't want it to change. I like this. The upside is, thank God it's going to change. I'm happy for that. Yeah. Well, and I also think that the mountains and the waters, the virtues of the mountains are high and broad. So this is another assist that nature is giving us. I know sometimes when I feel very contracted and not knowing, not seeing the choices that I have, just the act of looking up or looking out, like literally going to the ocean and looking at the ocean. Oh, looking up at the sky, up and out, not just this, right? Yeah, it's going to change, and there is something bigger here going on. Can I trust that?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. What might be something, when you think about your week coming up, that might be something that some of these words might be an assist for?
Well, one thing is so bad, remember, this is my life.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And related to the previous quote about, you know, each moment is complete. It's only my story that makes it incomplete or suffering. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just as you know, it's just your mind working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nettie.
I like having the word permeate be next to the word drop off. If I can let everything permeate through me, then I would drop off my identity as a separate person, and that is a far more relaxing place to be. So it's not. I don't think I've seen those two words put together like that. Letting everything penetrate, permeate right through me. then I drop off. Ego attachment.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and that literally, that's the word translated as liberate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's some of the kinds of gems that you can find in the book here, because he really gets into the language and really breaks it open and talks about those things. Yeah.
I keep getting the image of when clouds go over mountains, it drops the rain. It causes the rain to drop. So when you were talking about the permeation and the drop-off, mm-hmm. And sort of letting things pass, you know, like big dark clouds, and then the form of the mountains just causes the release or something.
So having kind of gotten into these and chewed over this a little bit and thinking of it about our life, I know when we first read it, maybe some of you were going, wow, I don't understand a word that he's saying here. Let's read it again. And let's take into this reading all the different things that we've been talking about and thinking about here. And let's see how it sits this time. Who would like to read it this time? Who's willing to do that? Okay, great. Nice and loud.
So are we just starting?
Number one, again, yeah, the first verse. This is the first verse.
These mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas, each abiding in its own Dharma state, fulfills exhaustive virtues. Because they are the circumstances prior to the kalpa of emptiness, they are this life of the present. Because they are the self before the germination of any subtle sign, they are liberated in their actual occurrence. Since the virtues of the mountains are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains, and the marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably liberated from the mountain.
Tiny bit more. A little bit more of a feeling of familiarity. Yeah.
Oh boy, what's next?
Great, okay. Well, what is next? So I didn't know how far we would get, and I really didn't want to try to rush. But now, how many of these did I make? This is big and thick, and maybe you don't want the whole thing. I can read it and give you a little hint for what's next. Yeah, because we only have like 10 more minutes. So I will give you, I'll read it, and we can talk a little bit about what's next. Now, one of the things I'm going to do, too, is I'm going to suggest that we not read every single part, because I went through the whole thing. I studied the whole thing when I was out there. And I think some of these are more potent than others. Sorry about that. But I think that with only three classes, I really want to hone in on some of the segments that I think are more potent. So the second one is one that I'm suggesting that we don't spend too much time with. And then I think next time I want to kind of get into, he's going to start talking about mountains walking, and the idea of mountains walking and mountains flowing. And so, for example, in 4, he's saying we should thoroughly investigate this address on constant walking. So we're going to kind of explore about that. And how we should do a clear accounting of the mountains walking and our own walking, including an accounting of both stepping back and stepping forward. This is something I talked about. How many of you were at the Dharma talk? Some of you, about a third of you or half of you. So we're going to be working more with this concept. But for those of you that weren't there, he starts talking about this idea of mountains walking forward and mountains walking backward. And so who remembers walking backward is with reference to
meditation. Looking inward at the source.
Looking inward. So more of the wisdom, the insight side of our practice. Mm-hmm. And walking forward would be
living your life with that wisdom.
Action.
action, actually hearing the suffering of the world and responding to the suffering of the world. So, you know, and these are two sides of our practice. Wisdom and compassion are sometimes called the two wings of Buddhism, and Avalokiteshvara, our bodhisattva of compassion. In the Heart Sutra, it's the Avalokiteshvara who is the one who studies, you know, while sitting deeply in Prajnaparamita, had the insight of emptiness. But Avalokiteshvara is also, in the Lotus Sutra, the one who hears the cries of the world, and with her, you know, myriad hands, reaches out to the beings. And sometimes we get into this dilemma of which side should we emphasize. Some of us favor one side more than the other. But again, here in the teaching, he's going to say, not only are both forward and backward walking important, but that it's actually what makes the movement of life happen. So that's what I'd like to take a look at next time. And but it's still this time. Yes.
Well,
so I'd like to challenge us to stay with this and try to squeeze a little bit more of our shared understanding.
Whatever arises next week in my life, I can say the circumstances of this thing that might arise started before the empty kapha. And that the germination of that sprout that might come up next week, you know, started before any subtle sign. And so when it appears, it's already not this kind of solid thing that I think might be my fault or might be your fault or might be Trump's fault. It's already liberated from anything that I might think it is. And if I can meet it with this, it's already this liberated, multivariate thing. I might be in love with it a little bit more rather than sort of blame me or him or her, because it's an expression of the timelessness of everything. That's how I might use this first paragraph next week.
Well, I think that's a real gift to all of us to articulate it in that way. And what occurs to me as you're speaking is that this is what our practice is, you know, there's nothing we can do about the circumstances. Really. I mean, yeah, you know, there's actions we can take, and we do, and we should, but fundamentally, where our liberation happens is how we think about it. And you just modeled, I think, for us a way, you know, using the encouragement of our teachers, that you can actually think about this, your circumstances and your challenges in such a way that you experience liberation. Anybody else? Yeah, Lisa.
Well, I'm realizing now I kind of struggle with, I'm not really interested in storytelling and people's stories, you know. I mean, I am. We can't help ourselves to be story. We just are so attached to stories. But I don't necessarily want to get into, I try not to get into a story about somebody I'm frustrated with or really angry with, or somebody I don't like them, don't like their behavior, I don't like whatever they're doing. I'm trying not to do that, but on the other hand, there's a side of me that I think my practice has helped even more, which is that there's patterns though, and I see patterns. You know, just in the world and in people's behavior. And so that's a little place where I get hung up. And I don't have a great insight about what to do about it. I'm just suggesting that I don't know how to loosen. I don't know how to.
How to loosen that grip?
I don't know where that eternal part happens in there, because I do want to see. I do want to see it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at life and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. imagining it. Mm-hmm. I think. I'm hoping. I'm trying. I'm like, is this really just what happening? What's happening right now? But then I'm like, yeah, but this happened 5 times before the same way. And so I see this. So I start to see patterns, and so it confuses my practice, because I'm like, well, am I making a story here, or is it just? And how do I work with the patterns that I see? Because I'm more of an active person, so I kind of do want to do something to answer the call of suffering. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the urge to, like...
Well, then you do something. Then you do something. And I think that it's so important that we always recognize that this teaching doesn't mean that we just sit there and go, oh, we roll with it. We're just like being buffeted by the waves. Whoa. You know, I mean, we do things because we're human, and sometimes action forward, right? So when you're reflecting on the patterns, you're in the stepping backward. I wonder what's going on here. I wonder if there's some liberation that I could help happen here. And maybe sometimes you're reaching forward and engaging with the being. And maybe it's not always calm and pretty.
No, it's not.
Right?
And I admit, I do try to look to my, I try to say, well, what's my part in the past?
Yeah.
What's my past?
Yeah. You try something, you see what happens.
And it's awful. No, but it can't.
No, okay.
It can get real messy. I'm just saying, it sounds... I always struggle with,
Lisa,
it's really dirt messy.
And that's okay. So then you step back again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I reached forward. I had my experience. Now I'm going to step back and I'm going to reflect on my experience. Whoa, that was pretty messy. Okay, take a breath. So what's the next step? It's back and forward, back and forward, back and forward. And if we can also be allowing ourselves to be permeated and dropping off, you know, then at some point, maybe there's a little bit of relief. Or maybe you see the humor in it. Or maybe you just go to the beach after work and run and yell and release the energy and watch a good show and then get up the next morning and try again. You know? Time for one more.
I have a question in regard to which originates way back with the old Buddhas, the formless, and manifested now. Does the way it manifests now depend on choices which make you who makes choices? The way that it comes into present day manifestation isn't probably not a lightning bolt, but goes to many permutations. And those permutations contain actions, choices. Your choices then reflect back on you. They sort of recreate you from which you make choices.
Is there a question that you're pondering in that reflection?
The way it's manifesting right now, would it contain that kind of history?
Well, the choice, I mean, it contains that history, whether I want to acknowledge it or not. And I can choose to engage it as a manifestation of the old Buddhas, or I can choose to engage it as I messed up again, and I don't like myself because this happened. you know, kind of a relatively new pattern, or maybe an old pattern. I can engage it with my old pattern, or I can engage it as, gee, this is the manifestation of the Buddhas, and now I will be, my action is going to be based on walking with the Buddhas rather than walking with this ego that's only 66 years old.
Uh-huh. So it's mostly in regard to a negative thing or a quote negative manifestation?
No, well, if something great happens, I can't say it was all because of my greatness. The old Buddhists have a little piece in that.
Yeah. There you go.
You don't necessarily need to adjust the way you look at it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, guess what? It's 8 o'clock. And so I encourage you to keep chewing on this material and let yourself read this a few more times. And if you want to try this practice of picking one line, whatever's the line that is the most resonant for you or the most challenging, take that line, write it on a card, and carry it around in your week and see what comes up. Just see what comes up as you interact with the world with these ideas in your pocket. And if you are coming next week and you would like to read ahead a little bit, we're going to be looking at three, four, and five, the material in 3, 4, and 5. So I think there's about 15 of these, and it's many, many pages. And the copy machine, I went, and it's kind of bizarre. It's like it's one direction, and then it's another direction. So you have to read it, you know, like that.
We have to adapt.
Yeah, you have to.